Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Rick Strassman, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, our toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, tell me about something that happened today. Or not.
It's pretty boring stuff. I don't think you'd be interested. But what's happening is that the snow is starting to melt. I see on the drive home, it's turning from the Arctic to New York, finally. So that's a good thing. The internet and social media was abuzz over the last couple of days with a story that has generated a lot of interest, and I know I see you printed
the article.
I've got the
story right here, yeah.
For those who might not be aware of this incident with the mother and baby, why don't you give us a recap?
Well, the caption on most of the internet sites is, "Did dead mother save her baby from beyond the grave?" Because, of course, you have to sensationalize things so that people will open it. And then it goes on, three U.S. cops claim mystery woman's voice called to them from the flooded car where they found baby alive besides her mother's body 14 hours after the crash. So when they refer to the mother's body, they're referring to the fact that the mother was dead. The baby, which was, I think, 18 months old, was obviously not the voice that they heard. And it wasn't just heard by one cop. It was heard by all of the first responders that were there.
Right, so the mother drove. It was an accident where she wound up going over a bridge and into the water.
Right. Lynn Grossbeck, 25, was driving home from her parents' house Friday night when she veered off roadway and into Spanish Fork River. So the car was not completely submerged, but it was in the
the mother apparently died instantly on
impact. But the baby who was in a car seat was obviously safe.
Right.
And even though nobody got to the car until 14 hours later, the baby remained safe in the car seat.
And the interesting thing here is how the responders, the first responders, were led to the car?
Well, apparently, if you read further, they did get a telephone call from somebody who noticed the car in the water.
Right.
And that's the 14-hour stretch where the car was sitting there. This guy first noticed and immediately called for help. And the police and first responders arrived. Once they arrived on the scene, they heard the voice.
And the voice was?
The voice was a woman's voice. They said that softly said, let me see if I can find a direct quote here. They describe it as a plea for help.
Right. So they heard something like, you know, help me, help me. And then so they assumed that there was a person.
That they would find a living person in the car.
And then when they found that the only person that was alive was a baby, they had no explanation.
Yeah, all it says here is, Bedos, which apparently is one of the first responders, said that he and the other three on the scene responded to the voice calling for help when they approached the car.
Right.
So they felt that the voice was coming from the car.
Yeah, and they all, it wasn't just one person, they all heard the voice, right? There were several police officers that heard the same voice. So what's interesting is the way that it was portrayed in the media. I was watching, a clip or a YouTube of the Today Show. I think it's a Today Show. Which is the one that Matt Lauer is on?
Yeah, Today Show. Today Show.
And the panel talked about the story, and that nobody on the panel there was willing to venture any type of opinion about what, you know, the explanation for the voice. They would just all look at each other and they would dance around the issue.
Right.
And nobody would dare say anything.
I think one person kind of blamed it on, well, maybe it could be some religious sort of thing.
Right, and then at the end, maybe it was Matt Lauer or somebody said that it was possibly, you know, a divine voice. So, meaning that, you know, perhaps this was, you know, the voice of God, which, listen, you can't discount that. Of course, that, you know, that's possible as well. It's more likely to me that it was the deceased mother who was. We know that kind of communication takes place. We know that the newly deceased and even people that are deceased for great periods of time can convey thoughts that somebody in the living will interpret it as being a voice. But nobody certainly on mainstream media would go there, you know, when it seems logical, you know.
Right, and I just want to throw out there that it doesn't necessarily, you know, everybody's saying it's the voice of the mother. It could be anybody on the other side who
right.
was seeking help for the crash victims.
Right.
So
it could be a grandparent. It could be a friend or a neighbor, or it could be a good Samaritan on the other side,
right?
Yeah. You know? But I think what was compelling about it is that, you know, it's a credible witness because, you know, it's a police officer and it was more than one.
More than one, which, you know, I think is something unusual. We've heard these stories before, but it's always only one person who hears it or sees it or experiences it. But here you've got... he says, and he and the three officers talked later and concurred that they all heard the same thing. They can't explain it, but they have no doubt that they heard it.
Right. So when you think about it, I mean, the main priority of somebody that's newly deceased would be to get a message, normally to get a message through to their loved one. It could be through a medium. It could be through direct, you know, communication. But here you have a situation... that they weren't, obviously the need wasn't to communicate that they're still around, help my child, you know. That was the urgent, message that took precedence over everything. So, you know, things like this, it bothers me that it just drives me nuts that nobody will discuss it.
No, and even when they talked to the police officers, one of them said, we're going back to the religion thing. It can only be religion or nothing else.
Right.
You know, it can't be spirit communicating, which we know has been going on since the dawn of man. You know, everything has to be oriented around religion. So he says, I'm not really religious, but that's what you think of.
Right. Well, and it could be a divine intervention that has nothing to do with organized religion. It's just
that's my
divine
point.
Intervention.
Right. Intervention is something coming from the divine, and we are all connected to the divine, and we are all connected to each other.
Right.
So why wouldn't we want to look out for each other, look out for the baby? I know here in the physical world, we don't always look out for each other, but maybe if we did, it would be a much finer world.
Well, we're going to be talking about the unseen world from our guests, so we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Rick Strassman, so stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Rick Strassman. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
And Dr. Rick Strassman is Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine, and he's president and co-founder of the Cottonwood Research Foundation. Now, from 1990 to 1995, Dr. Strassman performed the first human studies with psychedelic drugs in the United States in more than 20 years, focusing on the powerful, naturally occurring compound DMT. He's the author of DMT, the Spirit Molecule. He's the co-author of Inner Path to Outer Space, and his new book is called DMT and the Soul of Prophecy. And Rick's website is his name, rickstrassman.com. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Well, thanks very much for having me tonight.
And I guess we have to start off asking you a question that you've probably answered couple of thousand times, and for a lot of our listeners are not familiar when I mention DMT. So just give us a brief description of what exactly is DMT.
So DMT stands for dimethyltryptamine. It's a pretty small compound in terms of the combination of the atoms that compose it. It's not much larger than sugar or glucose. It's a chemical cousin to serotonin, which is a ubiquitous neurotransmitter in the brain. And it's also closely resembling melatonin, which is a pineal hormone, which is involved in sleep and reproduction. So DMT is a psychedelic drug. It produces a particular constellation of subjective alterations. It occurs in hundreds, if not thousands, of plants, and it also is a naturally occurring substance in the human body.
So, how do you embark upon research involving DMT? I mean, what was driving you to that? Were you searching for a role that it might play that was not obvious, or how do you get into it?
Yeah, so I kind of started off on this track with an interest in the biology of spirituality. I went to college on the West Coast in the late 60s, early 70s, and there was an influx of consciousness-altering technologies taking place at that time, one of which were the Eastern meditation practices, and the other were the psychedelic drugs. And I was struck, by similarities in the descriptions of the two states. So I thought perhaps there must be some biological common denominator. In other words, if you took a psychedelic drug, it might activate the same parts of the brain which were activated through certain techniques of meditation. So I started off, actually performing a study, looking into this by a careful examination of melatonin from the pineal gland. This was in the early 1980s, and there wasn't that much known about melatonin. there was some esoteric, physiology, spiritual evidence of a role of the pineal in spiritual states. It actually, turned out to be the case, that melatonin wasn't especially psychoactive. So in the meantime, I learned about the presence of DMT and its profound psychedelic properties, and decided I would study that instead. It was a pretty straightforward psychopharmacology study, but at the same time, I was quite keen on comparing the reports from my volunteers in response to getting DMT to states of consciousness which are called spiritual, things like the enlightenment experience, the near-death state, dreams, those kinds of things. And if giving DMT, replicated certain, features of those states, it would strengthen my hypothesis that naturally occurring DMT played a role in those non-drug states.
Hmm. I remember being quite excited after reading your first book about DMT, because right away, it just struck me, I kept questioning, how could it be, what purpose would it be for a naturally occurring hallucinogen to be in the human body, and then to also be in, as you mentioned, hundreds or thousands of plants? I mean, it seemed to me as if there was some, the purpose of DMT might be to facilitate glimpses of other realities. I guess that was, you were thinking along those lines when you wrote the book,
right? And even more interesting than it allowing glimpse into other realities, it may actually be involved in mediating this reality as well. And I'm saying that because it seems as if DMT is a necessary component of normal brain function. In other words, you know, the brain expends energy in getting DMT from the blood into its confines. And the brain only treats certain compounds like that, which are necessary for its normal function, like blood sugar and certain amino acids that the brain isn't able to synthesize on its own. So it could be, this is speculation. That normal consciousness requires, it requires a relatively narrow window of DMT concentrations in the brain in order, to sustain, normal consciousness. And over the last few years, it's been interesting. They've discovered quite high levels of activity of the enzyme which codes for the gene which completes the formation of DMT in the retina as well. So it also could be that our visual perception of the world is mediated by DMT.
Mm. Now, when you started your 5-year study using volunteers, a lot of the things which you wrote about in the first book were things that were reported by during these DMT experiences, and there was a great similarity, I thought, between what the subjects were reporting and the near-death experience reports that I've read. People reported seeing beings, being separated from the physical body, buzzing sounds, etc. I mean, is that something that you paid attention to while you were conducting the research?
Yeah. Well, so I speculated early on, even before starting the study, that, it was possible that DMT could be released at the time of death. And so I was expecting and hoping in, some ways that certain features of the DMT state would resemble those which people describe as they're dying.
Hmm. And I guess, I don't know whether you were surprised or not, but that, the subjects started describing what they would put it as gaining access to another world as opposed to a perception that was generated by the DMT. They, was real, more real than real, so to speak. So, I mean, did that surprise you?
Yeah, it actually did, because in the case of other psychedelics like LSD or psilocybin, one usually maintains a pretty clear distinction between everyday reality and the drug state. But in the DMT state, it completely replaces ongoing subjective and mental experience. And the volunteers were quite adamant in distinguishing between the DMT effect and dreams or hallucinations or even the effects of other psychedelic drugs because of that profound sense of reality.
Mm. In the new book, you told us about neurotheology, which I wasn't really familiar with, but you explained that, that's the theory that our brains respond to certain stimuli, like prayer or meditation, things like that, and that the brain creates the impression that one is in contact with a divine source. You propose in the new book a different model, theoneurology. So, it's a top-down model. So give us a little talk about what you mean by theoneurology.
Yeah, I started to look around for, theories or, models that could contain the, content or, the phenomena of the DMT experience. And, there were certain criteria or, certain, features of the state that really stood out. One of them, as we've been talking about, is the sense of it being more real than real. And the other was its highly interactive nature. I was expecting mystical unitive states like Buddhist enlightenment to be the goal of the drug state, a state in which there were no visions, no words, no content. One's personality was dissolved in the white light. And on the contrary, I think only one of my, 5 dozen volunteers had that kind of experience. Everyone else had quite highly interactive states. You know, they maintained their sense of self. You know, they were able to interact with the contents of the experience, you know, such as the beings and the visions, and the world of and the world of light that they entered into. You know, but at the same time, there didn't seem to be that much information being transmitted. You know, the volunteers were able to give extremely, you know, detailed reports of what they saw and heard and felt. You know, but the verbal information didn't seem especially rich. So I started to look around, you know, for other models. I started off with, you know, some of the more esoteric, you know, physics kind of models out there, dark matter, parallel universes, those kinds of things. And even though they provided useful mechanistic explanations, they still really didn't, you know, they still really didn't answer one of the most important, you know, questions of my research, which was, you know, what is this state good for? You know, how are people any better off? How is the world a better place as a result of these experiences? And so I then began, you know, looking, you know, for other models which would, you know, complement the scientific one. And, you know, those were the religious ones, you know, because they've been looking into altered states, you know, for millennia, and at the same time have been extracting ethical and moral and theological information, you know, garnered from those states. So, so by and by, I returned, you know, to my roots, which is Judaism and the Hebrew Bible, and started to look into the notion of the prophetic state. And then, in my attempts to understand the prophetic state, I then, you know, turned to the medieval Jewish. Then turned to the medieval Jewish, you know, philosophers, who had developed, you know, complicated, you know, metaphysics of the prophetic experience, which, you know, then, you know, led me, you know, to develop this, well, my new model, which I call, you know, theoneurology.
So, you know, when we talk about prophecy, most people, when I say prophecy, what comes to mind is predicting the future. You're talking about prophecy in a much broader sense, you know. So, how would you define prophecy?
Yeah. Well, that's true. Most people think about prophecy as predicting or foreselling. But I expand the definition to include any spiritual experience as reported by any figure in the Hebrew Bible. You know, so this could be visions and, you know, voices. You know, there could be foretelling, you know, but that isn't, you know, necessary for the definition. Mm-hmm. Inspiration can qualify as a, you know, kind of lower level of prophecy. If you look at, you know, some of the accounts in the Bible, you know, there's out-of-body experiences, there's intense emotions, you know, there's sounds, there's visions, you know, physical sensations, being completely helpless in the throe of encountering an all-powerful, either God or God's angels. You know, so if you expand that definition, it encompasses, you know, quite a bit. You know, in addition, you know, to the classical canonical prophets, you know, such as Ezekiel and Isaiah, you know, Moses, and you know, those, you know, kinds of figures. It, you know, can include any, you know, it can include any figure in the Bible, you know, that, you know, contacts, you know, divine, you know, phenomena.
Mm. So, is it your volunteers that were in your study? Do you think that they entered the same theological world as the prophets did, or perhaps they did and they just didn't know it?
Well, sure. Well, you know, that's, you know, Well, that's obviously, you know, one of the most important, you know, questions which, you know, my theory raises is, you know, can you induce the prophetic state by just, you know, giving a drug? But I don't think that's the case at all. I think if you look at, you know, the phenomenology of the two states, the DMT and the prophetic one, there's quite a bit of overlap in the visions and the voices and whatnot. But in, you know, terms of the in terms of the impact and the information content of the DMT experience, it's quite nonverbal. You know, I have a colleague at the University of California in, you know, Santa Cruz, and we've been talking about, you know, the mathematics of the DMT state. You know, perhaps the DMT state allows one to enter into the world of mathematics, but you know, that isn't the world of you know, the prophetic experience, which is extremely verbal. You know, contains all kinds of, you know, theological and ethical information and truths. You know, clearly, you know, the prophetic message has played a seminal, you know, role in you know, civilization. You know, the law, economics, art, wisdom, proverbs, well, even psychology is all, you know, kind of based in a lot of ways on the basic, you know, tenets which are laid out in the Hebrew Bible. If you look at the Hebrew Bible as a prophetic text, you can start, you know, to appreciate the extent of the influence of the prophetic message. You know, so I think, you know, qualitatively the states are quite different when you're looking at the information. Also, when you're looking at the mechanisms, too. In the DMT stage, you're giving DMT. And in the prophetic one, at least as I'm articulating it, you know, through my new model, you know, DMT increases as a result of divine influence, you know, from above, as opposed to giving DMT from below, as it were.
Yeah, this project was a huge undertaking for you. I mean, you came from the world of science, and you were used to working with hard data, and now your investigation or prophecy is quite different. I took it from reading your book that you would enter like an altered state of consciousness or meditation as you were poring over the ancient text. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think if you really study the Hebrew Bible and even study the commentators, either, you know, reading out loud in English, reading out loud in Hebrew in particular, you tend to enter into a mildly altered state. So I think you can enter into a state that, in a way, you know, kind of resonates with the information that's contained in the text. You know, like, for example, a comparable thing happens when you're studying, you know, Buddhist scripture. You enter into a state of meditation, you know, because the words in the scripture of, you know, Buddhism, you know, well, they emanate, you know, from, you know, the meditative state. So in a comparable way, if you're really, you know, honing in and completely clearing your mind of everything other than the prophetic text, I think you begin to resonate with the state of mind out of which that text emerged, you know, which is, you know, the state of prophecy.
Yeah, makes sense. We're going to go to a break, but when we come back, maybe we'll get into some of the specific comparisons that are outlined in the book, The DMT and the Soul of Prophecy. We're talking with Dr. Rick Strassman. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Rick Strassman. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. And now a few Forever Family Foundation announcements before we get back to our guest. When you are shopping on the internet, even for the smallest items, please keep Forever Family Foundation in mind. By doing one simple task when you shop, you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us any money at all. Since many of us shop on Amazon.com, using any of the Amazon links or book links on the Forever Family Foundation website to take you on to the Amazon site is the only step that you need to take before you start shopping. This will result in a donation from Amazon to us based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? That's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Go ahead, it's free. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,500 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Adobe, Best Western, Hanes, and Lord & Taylor, Nike, or Priceline. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. We're just a little bit more than a month away from our Holiday of the Earth raffle. And if you're going to want, and you are going to want to enter right now, when I share with you that we only have 21 people who have entered this wonderful raffle where you can win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Lynn LeClaire, Renata Santarelli, Renee Buck, Amy Utzman, and Tracy Bray. The drawing is Earth Day, April 22nd, so get your entries in as April will be here before you know it. The annual Afterlife Exploration Retreat in Chester, Connecticut will be this July 24th through the 26th. The event page is up on our website, and 15 of our 24 rooms are already reserved. Early word pricing for this exciting retreat will end on May 31st, so gather up your best friends forever and have a blast in a quad, a triple, or a double, or if you like your privacy, reserve a single. All rooms have air conditioning and a full private bathroom. The new Signs of Life magazine has been showing up in mailboxes across the country, and the praises for the new design and features has been steadily coming in. If you are out of the United States, you should have received your newsletter via email, and if you did not, perhaps you're not a full member of Forever Family Foundation. Time to fix that. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and click on the Become Member to complete this form. Membership is free. And visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all event links, information, and registration. And please, 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 when you are there, click on the donate button and send in the most generous contribution you can. This radio show, the newsletter, the website, and all the other wonderful things Forever Family Foundation does for free depend on the support of our listeners and members, as the work we do does not get us grants and support that other not-for-profits operate on. And finally, if you are a business interested in advertising on this show, contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Okay, Bob, back to you.
And we're back with Dr. Rick Strassman. The book is called DMT and the Soul of Prophecy, and the website is rickstrassman.com. You know, I want to mention, before we run out of time later, there is a very popular documentary for those who are interested and haven't, well, whether you've read the book or not. But the documentary is the same name, DMT, the Spirit Molecule. So tell me a bit about that, Rick. I mean, is that how had that come about?
Yeah, it came about, let's see, I think we started working on it maybe the end of 2006. I got a call from a filmmaker in Austin, Mitch Schultz, who just graduated from NYU School of Film. And he had smoked some DMT and was blown away, and he read my book, and then he called me and said he wanted to make a documentary about DMT, you know, based on, you know, the ideas contained in my first book. So he came out to Taos. I was living in Taos at the time in a raging snowstorm. And we shook hands, started filming in early 2007. And then, you know, filming kind of depended on funding. And we got a big influx of funds around 2009, 2010, and it came out about a year after that. Mm-hmm. It is a combination of, you know, talking heads, you know, scientists, and, you know, some of the volunteers from my DMT study. It contains, you know, some graphics, you know, DMT-like graphics. You know, there's a little bit on ayahuasca, which is a DMT-containing brew from the Amazon that's increasingly popular. It's on Netflix. You can stream it on Netflix, on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually been doing quite well. A couple of weeks after it came out, it actually surpassed film by Justin Bieber, you know.
Well, that's, we know that's your claim to fame.
So he beat the Biebs for a few days there.
You know, so in the book, DMT and the Soul Prophecy, a good part of the book is relating by category the experiences of the people who took you administered DMT to and compared it to the prophetic or spiritual accounts in the Hebrew Bible. And let's talk about some of them. I mean, some of the DMT subjects talked about emotions a lot. You know, they talked about things like peaceful feelings or awe. Some would talk about fear. How did that compare to the prophetic accounts? I mean, did you find emotions in the accounts in the Hebrew Bible?
Yeah, especially when when it came to the beginning of the onset of the state. One of the characteristics of the DMT experience is a lot of anxiety with a rush of the beginning of effects. And if you read the accounts in the Hebrew Bible, oftentimes, during the first experiences of prophecy, there's a rush. People fall to the ground. They feel a lot of anxiety and fear. They're overwhelmed. And that's quite, typical response to the beginning of the DMT effect as well. You know, it's interesting. As one becomes more comfortable and experienced with both the DMT effect or the prophetic one, the anxiety of the early onset of the transition into the different state, seems to be reduced.
Mm. You know, I didn't ask you this, but it just came to mind. When you got the volunteers for the subjects, some of these people had taken DMT before and some never had?
Well, in terms of recruiting people, I made certain everybody had experience with, some kind of psychedelic drug. It might be acid or mescaline or psilocybin mushrooms. Only two people had ever used DMT before, though. This was in the early 1990s, and DMT wasn't anywhere near as popular as it is now.
Yeah, it would seem that you would have to do the study that way, because somebody that never did any kind of, similar substance, might have more fearful reaction, when they lose control, so to speak. So it might skew the results.
Yeah, well, there were a couple of reasons I used experienced volunteers. One of them was, for the reason, that you just, described, which is that if you're an experienced individual, you wouldn't be as likely to panic. Also, I was interested in experienced volunteers because they would because they would be able to more carefully characterize the effects as well, and also could compare them to other psychedelic drugs.
Mm. One striking comparison that I read in the book was on synesthesia that you mentioned. One of your subjects described hearing and feeling colors, synesthesia, the mixing of the senses. And then you talked about an account from the Bible, a revelation at Sinai, where it was said that all the people could see the sounds. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's a real striking example, all the people heard the sound, or it could also be translated all the people heard the voice, which is a common characteristic of the psychedelic drug state.
Mm. Do the people that took DMT, I know they had visual experiences. Did the majority describe seeing a light, or darkness, or was there a mixture of both?
Well, the DMT state kind of enters one into a world of light. It's incredibly saturated, intensely colored, preternaturally bright. Early on, there's quite a bit of, pixelation and breakdown of the visual field with eyes open or eyes closed. Then when the person's experiences that their consciousness leaves their body, they enter into this world of light. It's, rapidly, morphing, buzzing, kaleidoscopic display. which then, you know, coalesces into more recognizable objects.
Mm. You were talking about modern physics a bit in the book, and you made the an interesting statement. You know, you said that modern physics is searching for invisible worlds now. I mean, in relation to dark matter and missing mass, and so there's not all that much difference between physics and metaphysics, you know, in this respect, because, you know, in metaphysics, we're trying to explain observable phenomena by invoking these theoretical processes. So that was that's something that must have come to you as you were working through all the comparisons and the data.
Well, yeah, in you know, both cases, we're trying to develop a, you know, science of the invisible, which, you know, manifests. In the case of, you know, physics, it's, you know, objective data, as it were, but still it's inexplicable. But in the same way, you know, the psychedelic, you know, drug state is a objective fact. You know, like dreams are objective. Everybody dreams, even though, you know, nobody can. You know, see somebody else's dreams, but still, everybody dreams. The characteristics of the dream state are quite well characterized, you know, nobody will just say, you know, dreams are a completely subjective experience. You know, well, because they are, but at the same time they aren't, because, you know, they're so widespread. You know, so in the same kind of way, you know, the psychedelic state, especially the DMT one, you know, it's an objective phenomena, even though it's experienced, you know, subjectively. Yeah, you know, so it's interesting to, to make, you know, that comparison between, you know, looking at the metaphysics of consciousness and the physics of consciousness.
Yeah. Well, I know we only have about a minute left, but I did want to touch on, if you can, what are the practical applications here after completing the your analysis of prophecy and DMT? What can we all learn?
Yeah. Well, in terms of my new book, there are some, you know, practical applications. You know, one could be if you're, you know, somebody who's experimenting with these drugs and you don't have a way to interpret or understand what's going on or integrate the effects into your everyday life. You know, to the extent the prophetic and the psychedelic state resemble each other, it's worth, you know, considering looking at the Hebrew Bible as a key to understand what's going on spiritually in the psychedelic drug state. If you revere the Bible and study it carefully, but you can't quite identify with what people are talking about in the text, if you enter into a state, I mean, obviously under careful supervision, you know, legally, all those kinds of things, you know, you could come closer to the prophetic state out of which the text emerged, you know, through the judicious, you know, use of the psychedelic, you know, drug experience.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. Again, the book is called DMT and the Soul of Prophecy. The website is rickstrassman.com. The book is available on Amazon, of course. There's a link on our website to it. And also look for the documentary, DMT, the Spirit Molecule. Thanks, Rick, and hope you'll join us again.
Okay, thanks a lot. It was fun.
Thanks. Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. As we visualize the healing light upon Donald Peterson, Judy Pernick, Donna Mello, David Mello, Kimberly Savage, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Miriam Pierschka, Julie Beischel, Ann Hutchinson, David Haith, Rita Springer, Vicki Steffi, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Roll, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Erica, Philip McPhee, Doug Berry, Wendy Lippo, Eileen Lafada, Patty Potter, Michael Tim, Lynn Austin, Glenna Irwin, Stanley Mullen, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, Karen Bryan, Richard, Andrea, and Joe. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.